Welcome, everybody, back to the Game Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mark, and today we are joined by Tom. We were both able to pull ourselves away from our PlayStation 5s today to be able to record this podcast. We'll get to that way later, but first off, Tom, how's everything going now that the day has arrived?
Everything's great. I have not been disappointed. I will put it that way, okay. And we'll talk about it more.
Yeah, yeah. I have not gotten much sleep on my end, but
I went to bed after midnight last night, and that I usually do not do that because 2 year old.
So. Yeah, exactly. But first, we did play some games before Rebirth came out, and I thought we'd just start with those. Tom, I'll let you go first, because mine is all over our stream and YouTube, so people know what I've been playing outside before Rebirth. But what have you been up to?
I gave myself a rule of not starting anything that I was going to want to continue playing before Rebirth, because I just kind of want to focus on that. So I was playing MLB The Show 23, and of course 24 came out, and I'm like, great. What am I going to do now? But I continued playing 23. I didn't bother with 24. Just doing Road of the Show. It really is just amazing how much of a time sink that can be, because you just go, yeah. I could play another game, because you're not playing a full game. You're just playing the parts that you play. So it is pretty amazing how quickly you can blow through, 20 games or whatever. And
The best decision I made last time I played Road to the Show, which has been a while, I just like to go in and make super teams and then try and see how high I can get the stats when I play the show. But I made the mistake the first time playing catcher, which means you play all 9 innings. And then I found out the cheat code, which is just make yourself a relief pitcher. And you can basically make it to the show if you're good enough at pitching in like 2 hours, maybe.
That's funny. No, I'm an inning at a time. I'm a catcher, and I do not play every inning.
Oh, maybe they changed that from the last time I played, because they wanted you to like call the pitches and all that.
Oh, every once in a while that'll show up, but it's not for it's not in like every game.
Oh, maybe that it's been a few years. I think it was pandemic when I did it.
I was gonna say I think around like 2020 it changed to that.
Yeah,
because people didn't want to play the whole game.
Yeah,
kind of like when you would do the hell was it called? Road to the Heisman or whatever it was in NCAA. Yeah. If you picked a quarterback, you played every single play.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah. That was being like that.
But yeah, relief pitcher is the cheat code if you just want to see the contract stuff and getting traded things. Because you could blow through most of a season and maybe play 60 of them.
Yep.
at best. but anyway, continue. How's your guy doing? What level are you at?
I have made it to the show. I am second year pro. Okay. So my player is just starting to get good. You're automatically kind of good when you get there, but it's not as fast tracked as the older games were. Like I feel like 2020. I don't remember. I think it was maybe 2021. I feel like your player got really good really fast. And I think they've slowed that down in subsequent. So it makes it a little more challenging.
Yeah, they're making everybody Bryce Harper. come up at 19, 20, win an MVP at 21.
Well, that's what it's like. That's what I think it was 2021 was like, because you would come up and your guy would be like in 90 already, like in the second season. Which makes no sense. And you would just roll over guys. Like you'd hit 50 home runs, no problem.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So
I remember Ann talking about that.
It's good that they kind of slowed it down a little bit. I'm all right with that.
All right. So final two questions on that. Sure. What team are you on?
I'm on the Yankees.
Okay. So they didn't trade you.
No, not yet.
I remember Ann said he got traded to the Rockies.
Oof. That's. No. That's brutal.
When he was in the minors. I don't know if they changed that. This was a while ago. But okay. So you're on the Yankees, and position?
Catcher.
Catcher. All right.
I mean, it's I've done outfield and I've done other positions, but I feel like catcher is the most fun to me because I was a catcher myself, so being able to call pitches and throw out runners, it's fun.
And I also feel that catcher is the position where if you really hate playing defense in that game, is where you can still do enough, like throwing out runners and calling pitches to satisfy that side, but not have to worry about, you know, all the, you know, infield stuff and, you know, judging outfield things and when you only get one chance to do it.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful that you have that a bit of a cushion being a catcher. You got a little leeway.
Yeah. All right. So
made it to the show, and I'll probably throw that on. That'll be my like secondary thing if I need something to do in between Rebirth, but I don't think that's going to happen. And the other thing I've been doing, I've been messing around with the Mister because I've been in a retro mood lately, and for some reason I always get every once in a while I get the hankering to play Gran Turismo 1.
Okay.
Which most people wouldn't, because it's like if you're ranking them, it's probably one of the lesser ones to we'll go back to, because Gran Turismo 2 is basically the same thing but better.
Yeah. So
not a lot of people go back to 1, but I enjoy going back to 1 because it was my first one, and it's always a great nostalgia trip to go back, because the big thing about Gran Turismo, one of the big things about Gran Turismo games, is the music. And I could just sit with the Gran Turismo music playing and get some of the same experience that I would if I was actually playing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been playing that, and go ahead.
I was going to say, the only thing I remember, because Gran Turismo 1's the only one I really played a lot, despite having 5 because I bought it on a lightning sale for $3 on Amazon. And I still remember my car. It was a 1988 Honda Prelude.
Yep.
Was the car that I had, and made it halfway through the game with that. Never went to buy anything. We just kept souping that up.
That's the best part about those games is the fact that you can just take a POS and make it through half the game without doing anything.
And it's still that game, how many, almost 30 years later, you know, still brings a smile to my face every time I see a Honda Prelude in the wild. I go, yes, I get it.
Yeah, it's great. And something else I was playing with was the Crash Bandicoot, the original Crash Bandicoot, because even though Crash was like the mascot for the PlayStation, I never had Crash ever. I never had Crash or Spyro, so I felt like maybe I should give this a shot. And there's a reason it was so popular. It's a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. I had all three because my mom, when she was buying me video games, you know, for Christmas, was like, "Oh, this is like Mario. This is the Mario that system he has."
I mean, it kind of was.
Yeah, that's the advertising. That's all they see. So I had all three. First one's amazing. The other ones, they tried new stuff, were still really good, like better playing than probably one, but threw too much weird shit in there. From what I remember, it's not like a Donkey Kong Country 2 situation where 2 is clearly the superior one of the series. But the fun thing was, I was thinking of ages, and when you brought up Spyro, I was like, I feel like me being just 1 or 2 years older than you means I would like be the Crash era and you would be the Spyro era, just based on where they came out. Like that was the, you know, that was the,
agree with that.
Yeah, the age, because Crash first games and then Spyro just took over with like within 2 years.
I feel like just because mostly because Spyro was a wide open like 3D platformer, while Crash was more of a
level
single plane platformer, either you were going towards the screen, away from the screen, or side scrolling, and Spyro gave you a bit more control that way.
Yeah, more level based, you know, not an open world sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, not right. It wasn't an open world, but there was a hub world. It was just like every other collectathon.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know or weren't born yet when Crash came out, basically, their hub world was you would just go into this tunnel and there would be like 5 different airlocks. That would be the set of levels. Like, it wasn't like Banjo or Spyro, where you had to go find the gates to get into the next set of levels. Yeah. This was very, very bare bones in terms of a hub.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. That's what I've been doing. Yeah. I've been trying to keep it light due to our current game coming out.
Yeah. So for me, I'll start off old school too. I finally figured out what was going on with NCAA 14 on my computer. I had accidentally, it's a two-prong problem, something that I may need to look into down the road with my GPU. But I did not have the game on the computer because when I went to transfer it to the other computer, I literally took the file instead of copying it. So I had to re-download it and just dropped it in. And thankfully, the emulator's pretty forgiving with that. And I figured out the second problem I was having is because for some reason recently, my computer fails to pick up my GPU if I leave it on too long, and then I have to reboot and it picks it back up again. Don't know what's going on with that.
That's weird.
Yeah, because I only notice it when I didn't know that this was the problem with the emulator. The way I know that happens is if I try to stream, it'll click that it cannot read, you know, whatever, blah blah blah, to do hardware encoding. Whatever it is. Yeah, it's weird, but it's fine. I mean, nothing's broken yet, and fingers crossed. Everything runs well. I can run it, 1440p, no problem. So I don't think it's the actual card. It could be the motherboard, but who knows? But I did not know that was the problem I was having with the thing, was that the emulator was not reading the GPU, because I downloaded everything. Everything was good, perfectly fine. And then I would click, and this error message would pop up. And I'd be like, what the fuck? Yeah. And I would do it for every game. And I'm like, I know these games are here. So figured that out. So anyway,
I'm glad you figured it out. That would drive me nuts.
Yeah. So I figured it out and game boots up because I got really excited because they announced College Football 25. The best news I heard, I'll have some comments about the things that went on with that announcement, was I heard that they're going to have the college football playoff, and it's customizable. And I was like, it's going to be so good, because I've been using the thing on that was just a pain in the ass to set it up. And then the game would freak out. It gives me national championships, but say I have a 0-0 record, in the system, but still count me as the wins because the total wins are still right. It's a mess. So I stopped doing that for the season I was playing. I just did the normal BCS 1-2 final. So really excited for the new college football. I love how people did not understand them doing the NIL thing of just, hey, $600 in the game. Here you go. Most people were like, oh, they need to negotiate. Union, need to buy them. I'm like, I'm going to tell you right now, EA knows they don't need the players.
People
will buy that because after 3 or 4 years of a dynasty, those players are gone. This isn't Madden.
Right.
You know?
It's not right. You're not locking players up for 20 years or whatever.
Yeah. And, if they're doing an ultimate team, then that becomes a problem. And I don't even know how you could do that for college football, to be honest. But yeah. And then some people were complaining. And then the report came out that half of the 11,000 people had already signed up. And I'm like, of course they did. The second left tackle at Central Michigan is, of course, going to take $600 in the free game. you're going to get close to 10,000 or more of these kids signing up. It's going to be a few hundred that might hold out, maybe. It might even be less than that.
I imagine it's going to be the big-name players that are going to want
more. And basically just EA pays the NIL collective on the side, and those guys get in the game. So, or you got quarterback 13 for USC or whatever sort of situation. But yeah, it was just funny seeing the people that don't know video games but know college football and vice versa. Get everything completely wrong about that announcement. But anyway, it's fun being in both worlds and understanding what's going on. But so yeah, I did that. I have won 57 consecutive games in there. Nice. Broke Bear Bryant's record of 52 in a row. Still on it. I think I'm at 58. I think I won the first game of my next season. With the Tulane Green Wave.
Impressive.
Go Wave. I hope the game is as broken as that is. If you get good enough at recruiting, you can turn any team into like Alabama. But yes, I played through that. And then the big thing I've been playing, which I've been streaming, which I got to get two more of them up on YouTube, is Persona 3 Reload. The game is amazing. It shouldn't be a shock. All Persona games are great. Some of them don't age as well in certain parts just because of when they released. They seem to have made a lot of good changes to this compared to when I was watching somebody play an old version to modernize it. Whether you say it's better for the game one way or the other, they did a good thing of bringing it into modern times. That game was released in 2006, I believe, originally, because they took the original gameplay, not the updates that happened after that. And the game is set...
That was a PS2 game, right?
Yeah, and the game was set in 2009. But a lot of the quality of life stuff is great. Characters and voice acting are as good as they usually are in those games. Found out Googling that, yes, you can have relationships with your teammates, so I think Mitsuru is back on top as waifu number one. The combat, I like the improvements they made to the combat. I don't know if the people I was watching stream just didn't know you could take control of the characters, or if the original Persona 3 forced those characters to act on their own and you just gave them guidance. I don't remember, because I only played Fez, which was the update which allowed you to control. And I didn't even play much of that. The story is still... I haven't gotten to the crux of it, as all Persona games do. It seems like this one's a little bit more of a slow burn than you basically figure out something in the first two games by this point. You don't know who the big bad is in both for a while. But in this, it's just all about the Dark Hour and Shadows and apathy syndrome and all that. And I'm like, why is this all this happening? There's a big tower that the school turns into. They dealt with everything that I thought of. I was like, what happens if someone stays in school when it turns? And that is one of the quests you go on, because your last teammate gets locked in the gymnasium by bullies and ends up in the shadow world.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Well, there's so many slightly terrible things in this game, like not in a bad way, but sort of like, oh man, Persona does go for it a lot.
That game for sure definitely has some stuff that I'm surprised they got away with.
You shoot yourself in the head to summon your personas. But they have a line like 7 hours into the game, mind you, that, the gun doesn't have bullets. Well, thanks for making that clear. 7 hours into the game.
Thanks for letting us know, guys.
Maybe it's when they first give your character the gun, say, there's no bullets. Don't worry about it.
Right, something. Just like you always say, just give me one line.
That's all you had to do. You did at hour 7, you could have done an hour 2.
It doesn't even have... When do they give you the gun?
Oh, they give you the gun, it's about hour 2, because you go through stupid stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Just when they first give it to you,
And it makes that part even crazier, Tom, from the fact that your character picks up the gun and shoots himself in the head without any idea what is there a bullet? Am I going to kill myself? Like, there's no
Russian roulette.
like when they tell you that 7 or 8 hours later, and you're like, that makes everything he did in that opening scene like fucking crazy. He has no assurance that this is going to go. But anyway, that's bad. You can see why this one took a while to get remade. And they couldn't not do it because everybody knows this is the game where the teens shoot themselves in the head. But they at least make it, it's not as graphic as it was on the PS2, as I found out watching someone play that.
There's still stuff that splats out the side of your head every time you do it.
Yeah, but it's more cartoony than in the PS2 version. And also they're a little more chibi-esque, not so much, but the characters just look different. Obviously with the updated graphics, but yeah. So I've been having a lot of fun with that. Probably going to continue it on Wednesday. just got stuck. I wanted to get through as much of Rebirth as possible before the podcast, so I just put it off for this weekend. So be on the lookout for that. And yeah, I think it'll give me a nice change of pace, because Rebirth, you know, has, you know, some, a little more, you know, traditional JRPG-ness to it. And this has that very Persona, you know, relationships, things, weird school stuff. The fact that you play with a little girl at a park at a shrine, you know, just things like that. You know, that make it completely different than even the crazy shit going on in Rebirth. So yeah, be on the lookout for that. And once I get done Persona 3, which will be probably a couple months, I'll probably pick up Eterna Knights if I don't do that sooner. Because that's another short game to kind of palate cleanse in a bad sense, but just give my mind something else to think about. Yeah, so that'll do it for what we've been playing outside of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is what we should rename this segment for the next 2 months. Let's head to the news. So I want to start out with a PSA for anyone out there that gets their games off Steam. I don't know how long this has been going on, but I got tipped off from a friend, and then I heard it all over streams and the news, gaming news. Apparently, people are putting in, like, fake games, but giving them basically makes it look like the page for popular games. Helldivers 2, Last Epoch, Final Fantasy 7. And just basically you buy the game and that's not the game. You buy some random thing and then the people just take your money.
How the hell does Valve not know about this?
Valve squashes them as soon as they find out, but then it just keeps popping up, you know.
That's messed up.
Yeah. So just I don't know how to tell you to absolutely make sure. I would check out IGN and all that stuff. You know, they might have tips and tricks on that.
Or see if there's a link from the people, like the actual creators of the game.
Yeah, go to the game's website and find and click the Buy on Steam link there. That's probably the best option, to be honest. Just be on the lookout. Don't get scammed. So PSA there. This is the funny story before we get to the one actual news story we have for today. So. I don't know if you saw this, Tom. You've been on a little bit of social media, blackout as much as I do. So I didn't find this out until researching for news stories today. Apparently, Square Enix, Y2K'd itself with Theater Rhythm.
Oh, I did see this because of the leap year, right?
Because it could not figure out February 29th. So the game did not load for the entire day. And the reason it didn't load might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard, because it should have been programmed in there. The reason it was holding up was because when the game turns on, when you connect to the server, it always checks to see if that date is your birthday. So for some reason, it did not recognize February 29th. But people do have a birthday on February 29th.
A lot of people have a birthday on February 29th.
Yeah, but I guess those people would probably, for these situations where it could be like a yearly gift, would probably just put it on March 1st or whatever. I don't know how they handle it. If you have a leap year birthday, feel free to contact us on Twitter at Game Vault Pod and let us know how you deal with games that give things for your birthday. Do you take the risk that they'll know what February 29th is?
I would guess they probably put the 28th or the 1st.
But
that's my guess.
But the sheer fact that it didn't just like fail to like give anybody birthday things, it basically crashed the entire game for a day. And one of the best conspiracy theories I saw was someone was like, Square is so in on you playing Rebirth that they made sure you couldn't play any other Final Fantasy game on February 29th. But yeah, that was a fun story I saw when I was looking through the stuff here, because there wasn't much. A lot of stories are just sad and depressing about layoffs because the game industry is fucked right now. But
yeah, well, I mean, it's not just the games industry; it's everywhere. Yeah, so.
Yeah, we're a gaming podcast. So.
Yeah, either way, it sucks, and we feel bad for everybody, and we apologize.
Yeah, it's kind of rough, and just the real dumb things they're doing. Because without going deep, it's like not even worrying about people on visas and stuff like that. It's just crazy with all the worldwide layoffs. Anyway, in slightly good news from a developer, it seems like Remedy, in a completely amicable buy, bought the entire rights back from 505 Games for Control for $18 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah, which just seems like maybe 505 was just like, sure, thank you for the money, you know, or whatever. You know, here, have it back. We're not going to do anything with it. You know, so they have everything back. I wonder if they've been, like, trying to get, what's his name? Work out some deal for Quantum Break, because I believe that's owned by Microsoft.
Yeah, I believe that's Microsoft
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, they're not even going to touch Max Payne 3. They could care less about it, or couldn't care less about it.
I mean, it is what it is with Max Payne. There's only so much they can do, because...
They made it a completely different game. Yeah, it's Rockstar. It's Take-Two owns that. The only thing that had anything to do with any of those first two Max Payne games is that they got the same guy to do the voice because they were basically bullied by people back in early internet times.
Yep.
It's like, how are you going to have Max Payne and not to have that Max Payne? But, yeah, so this just clears the way for Control 2 to not have any weird things like Alan Wake 2 had, where they made references to Quantum Break. And also, all the references in Alan Wake 2 let me know how amicable, you know, this situation was between Remedy and 505. You know, that they were allowed to make all those references and bring all those things in and, you know, didn't have to worry about IP stuff like they would with Microsoft for some weird reason. But, so Control 2, that's probably where they're going next with this, which I would be on board for. Remedy's last two games and Control and Alan Wake 2 have been my games of the year. So to say I'm looking forward to that, it's not on Rebirth level, but maybe as I get closer, it'll creep up there. But yeah, so that was the news. Not much yet. March this month is going to be where everything sort of pops off as it's end of Q1 heading into, I guess, June. I guess it's Summer Games Fest time since E3 is dead. You know,
yeah, so, sounds about right.
So all this stuff will be picking up, there. So, we normally have a third segment here where we talk about some topic or anything, but to be honest, me and Tom just want to talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Think we can do it without spoiling so much. Granted,
oh, yeah, don't think we'll spoil anything. I mean, everything we're going to talk about is within the first 2 hours of the game, pretty much. So,
because
that's all we've been able to do.
Yeah, only because one of us has the responsibility of a child, and the other one is allowed to game as a child, like a child. One of those two is a little bit further than the other.
Yeah.
We can keep it basically non-spoilery. What I'll say immediately is, Tom, I think we're going to be on two different ends of this. And I would love to open the discussion with this. I am playing on graphics because maybe this is like a cilantro thing, but I can't. A game being 30 or a little less doesn't bother me. I mean, if you get into the 10s and teens, then I notice. But like, I've seen some streamers go, I can't even play in graphics. It's disgusting. And I'm like, I don't get it. What do you mean? But I feel like it's a very cilantro is the best description of it.
Yeah, where, I can see that.
Where some people really like it and don't taste the dish soap, and then there are people that are normal. No, I'm just kidding. So I'm playing on graphics. It looks beautiful in the 4K, 1440, whatever it's pumping out. Game looks amazing. I know you have more firsthand experience on this. I've heard that performance is a little blurry in spots. Graphics-wise?
In the demo, it definitely was, but when I loaded up the actual game, it was way better. But I can see where people were upset about the performance mode looking like shit, but...
Yeah.
Luckily, it seems whatever filter was being applied or whatever is a lot less in the actual retail version of the game.
Yeah, from what I was seeing, I think it was Maximilian Dude. Like I said, I played ahead and I would go back and watch what they played. It looks like he said when they were doing performance mode, it would kick out 1080 consistently and maybe bump the 1440 occasionally. That's how they were able to get to the 60 with it, which is not, I mean, 1080 is not terrible. If you don't have a 4K TV, I mean, you're not even going to notice that. And then I was doing like upscale 4K native 1440 for graphics. So you could tell the difference in there, but it would do 30 and sometimes a little under 30. So it really comes down to, do you get the thing where it makes you feel nauseous or whatever playing at a, you know, lower speed? You know, it's not wrong one way or the other, to be honest. But
I don't get nauseous, but for me, ever since the, let's see, ever since the Xbox One X came out, and the PS4 Pro, and I was able to play games at 60 FPS, I have not wanted to go back. So I started in the graphics mode, and I was like, oh, this looks beautiful. Turn it off. Once I've seen it, I don't need to see it again.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I'll load it up and see, oh, wow, that looks great. And then I'll just turn it off and go into performance mode because, especially in a game like this, that's super fast paced in the battle system, I want as many frames as I could possibly get thrown at my face. So,
yeah, and I also feel that if you really want to dive in to research this, I feel like that it's people that played first-person shooters and fighting games exclusively, or like that was the majority of their gameplay coming up, have this like feeling that everything has to be 60, you know, because that, you know, they played so many games where 60 is needed and, you know, it just looks good to them. And then like those of us that played, you know, mainly sports games, you know, or games that didn't really rely on like pinpoint control, you know, grew up fine, like with the 30. I think that's really where that could be a good like beginning line of investigation into that. But it's an interesting topic to go. Like I said, if it gets into the teens, then yeah, I'm like, fuck this. but in at 30, I don't really like that one streamer's like, this is disgusting at 30. I'm like, okay. All right. I go immediately go to Big Lebowski. It's like your opinion, man. It's
like your opinion, man.
But anyway, settings and stuff before we get into actual gameplay. I don't know if you've done this, but I heard this from somebody. Make sure you turn down everything but the dialogue to like 6 or 7 and keep the dialogue at 10, or else at times the music and the sound effects are going to overwhelm the audio.
I'm going to need to do that because I feel like that's been happening, especially in one of the first side quests. I was listening to I can never remember her name, but she's in remake and she makes a return. Yeah. She was talking and I'm like, why can't I hear a word she's saying? Because the music and whatever the background noise is just blasting and I could barely hear what she's saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So word advice, Tom will try it next time he jumps on. Anybody just starting or has been playing, just go ahead and do that. It'll make your life much easier. Trust me, the music still comes through perfectly well at 7. So, yeah, the person I heard it off of said they were in one scene talking to somebody, nobody important really, but like one of the Unreal Engine like things where a can was banging around in the background because they walked through it was
I've had some funny incidents with Unreal so far.
Yeah, then the can was just banging around and the sound effects number being a 10 was so high, you couldn't hear anything else except for that can, like, freaking out in the back of the scene. So, yeah, it's just... and it also helps in cutscenes, too.
I will have to do that. I did not know I didn't know that was part of the problem.
And the other thing, final thing, if you feel the camera's too zoomed in, The in-battle and in-world cameras are set to the closest zoom. So back it up if you feel like it's too close for you.
I may have to do that in the battle section.
Yeah.
But in normal running around, it's been fine. Yeah.
One is the closest. Three is the furthest. Okay. So.
Yeah, maybe in battle I'll have to zoom it out because I feel like I can't see everything all the time in battle. But
yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But yeah, my first battle, I noticed that. And I was like, I think this is doing the remake thing where they auto set it to the zoomed in. And I went and checked. I was like, why didn't I check this when I checked everything else?
Another setting I need to change when I go back. There's a setting for combos. Okay. And it's either fixed or free. So if it's set to fixed, your combos will just continue to hit the thing you're hitting until it's over. If you set it to free, you could freely go between enemies.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be changing that because I would much rather have that level of control.
Yeah. All right. So that's your settings section of this discussion. Always good for people that are just starting or people that might be frustrated and they change these and it just changes the entire game for them and they continue. First off, I will say without, you know, spoiling anything, starting off the way they did was a genius move because none of that was, shown in any of the stuff leading up to it, that's what would be the beginning. So kudos, to them. I don't want to ruin that part, but, if you haven't played yet,
we won't talk about the beginning, the absolute beginning, because you need to see it.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. But it's a really cool way. It shocked the hell out of a couple streamers who had gone to all the press events and was like, oh, yeah. And it was like, wait a second. This is new. What's this?
Oh, it shocked the hell out of me. That's for sure.
Yeah. So thumbs up on the opening. I think the story so far has been pretty good. There's just a couple weird lines of dialogue, which we can talk about in the spoiler cast when we get there, where they like forced like ideas of the story when you didn't really need to force the line to be said by the character. We can talk offline about what I'm talking about there. But but I think so far, if you haven't played the original, I think it's been compelling enough of a story.
Absolutely. I think the flashback alone gets you there.
Which is, if you play through the whole flashback, it's basically teaching you the game again without, you know, having to worry about, you know, you a little overpowered. And
it's what we figured the game was going to do. We figured it was going to that was going to be the demo or the beginning, just to reteach you how to play the game and you don't have to worry about not having any of your stuff and all that other. All that other stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, that flashback, just since it was in the demo, we can talk a little bit about what was in it without spoiling what it means, which we probably have at some point in this podcast. But seeing Nibelheim as like a fully realized town and not just three screens was kind of amazing, where there like multi-levels to it.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't wait to see the rest of these towns based on just Nibelheim.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how difficult it must have been to create these towns out of, like you said, three screens that didn't have any motion or any life to them at all.
Yeah.
And just give them, you know, all of this stuff happening. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, just like I was saying, Nibelheim, just having it set up where, okay, what we saw in 7 was like the center of town.
Mm-hmm.
Like the water tower, all that stuff is the center of town, but there's a level below that has a few houses, there's a level above that has a few houses, and then there's the giant staircase to Shinra Manor. And I'm like, oh, when I first saw that in the demo, I'm like, all right, I think they actually know how to like make these towns feel like towns.
Yeah,
and not just add on. The one thing that's always unbelievable, but they have to keep it in, is that all your major stuff is in one area. It's like, oh, I can stand on the water tower and go in, general store, Cloud's house, Tifa's house, and then the church main waiting room, you know, where Sephiroth and the mayor go to meet. And that's all, they just spin around on the water tower. and every major thing outside of Shinra Manor is right there. But that's what they did in the game, so they couldn't move any of that stuff. My final initial thoughts on it, and I'll jump it over to you, Tom, is that I really like the rhythm of the game for me in terms of what each region basically follows the same pattern. You know, I've been through two of them. I have completed the Grasslands and Junon, which are two we know about, so no spoilers. Like, those two have been very, very clear. And I'm just about to head up to Junon. And it's the same, like, they do some things to make it a little different, but the pattern is pretty good. There's not a lot of fetch questing, which was a big problem in Remake. Everything is based on either a mini game or a battle, like fighting, which is good. The chocobos are amazing. And all the characters seem as wild and crazy as 7's characters were. Like, they don't, hesitate on any of that stuff. So everybody you meet that is like a main character, like all the side people are still somewhat generic, but when you're putting 24 people in a town, their dialogue is all going to be generic. But they did such a great idea with how they're setting this out in the open sections, not open world. You can go from one to the other with almost no problem. My only one complaint is some of the terrain is really hard to find things in. It took me literally 15 minutes to find the last thing I needed to get in Junon, because the way it looked on the map, it looked like it was in one place, but it was actually below that place.
Oh, that's the worst.
So, yeah. So note to self, when you get there, Tom, and you see something that looks like it's in the middle of town, it's actually below the town. Hang off the cliff and see the down and see, you know, what's off the cliff. But so far, and I will say that 80 to 90% of the stuff that I saw in terms of, you know, in trailers for the most part, outside of little flashes here and there, are mostly been what I played. So there is so much more that I haven't seen outside of like Gold Saucer and stuff that we've seen and a little bit of Corel. Mm-hmm. And I just went through my head because I'm at almost 25 hours, something like that. I think I did 9 or 10 hours both days, plus getting through the Nibelheim stuff, which thank God you could skip the first time. We have Calm and Junon. Oh, shit. There's like 6 more towns. And that's not even like the regions in between those towns. And I'm like, holy balls. So I'm looking very much forward to it. And my final thought, I don't know if the game is funnier than Remake, but it's funnier than Remake. I have laughed out loud a few times. There's a great scene. We'll mention it because it's no spoiler to it. Barrett's going off about something and says people that took their word for it are dumbasses. And then Aerith goes, "Does that make me a dumbass?" And then Barrett has instantly
walk that back real quick.
Like stuff like that is really good throughout it, and the way they just interpret red in the world is amazing. Tom, you're gonna love it.
I can't wait to see how they get around. Like, well, I have run into one person who just thought he was a normal dog.
Yes. Yeah. That's basically the ongoing joke. it's kind of insane. And then how they treat some things in Lower Junon, you'll like. But what's your initial thoughts before I discuss the thing I'm most obsessed about in this game?
I know exactly what you're going to talk about. But initial thoughts are, this is going to take over my life is what my real initial thought is, but I'm really enjoying it so far. I can't complain about anything they've done. I mean, everything looks great. I will say one thing. The game is hard. It's not easy.
I forgot to ask you that. Are you playing on normal or dynamic?
I'm playing on normal.
Okay.
But the game is way more difficult than Remake was. And I'm guessing they got a lot of complaints that Remake was too easy because, I went on one of my first side quest missions and I got my ass kicked. over and over and over. So I was like, all right, I'm going to leave that one and come back to it because clearly I'm not doing something right. So I'm just going to grind a little to gain levels before I go back to that. But yeah, some of Chadley's stuff is difficult. But you mentioned something before the podcast that, hey, I'm going to need to go start looking around for things that could possibly make things easier.
Yeah.
So that will be my next mission when I go play next. But man, the game's beautiful. So far the story stuff, I haven't seen anything that like really annoyed me or caused me to second guess it. So I think we're on the right track.
Yeah.
And they added in another freaking mini game that's going to derail any progress that I make in the game.
All right. Now that we got all that out of the way, Tom, let's talk about the real thing. We need to talk about Queen's Blood.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Queen's Blood is amazing.
Queen's Blood is... I'm not good at it. I'm not good because I'm still figuring... Because I don't really have a strategy when I start playing Queen's Blood. So I imagine there's something I need to do.
Yes. So there's two strategies that I figured out. I haven't really zeroed down on what I've done, but you can either, like they say, play a little defensive and just gain points and just try to win that way, or you can go for board control and basically box them out so they can't play any more cards. I tend to play that way, but
in certain matches I've done either one. I have not done all of one or all of the other. So maybe that's my problem. Maybe I need to pick something and stick to that.
Yeah, and some of the cards they give you, I bought every card pack they've given me a chance to. So I have as many cards as you can get.
That's the other thing, is I have not bought any cards. I've only gained cards from winning battles.
Yeah, go buy cards if you want to keep playing. And it's not all the cards. They probably all have their own uses, but there's at least one or two cards in each pack that either could be useful for you going forward. The first thing, I think there's three things that you need to know to play. And understanding the third one is when you actually start understanding the game. Mm-hmm. The first thing, which I saw two streamers, God bless them, I love Max, but kept confusing, like, what's on the top left of the card and what's on the top right of the card. For those of you who don't know, let me explain it here. Top left is the power, quote unquote. I'm using inscription terminology. Is your power, like that's the pawn on the board, you know, that you need that many pawns to be able to play that card. The number on the right is what it'll give you as a score.
Let me just say, I'm glad I haven't messed that up.
Yeah.
Because I got that pretty much well off the bat. I was okay with that.
So that's number one, or else you're going to be like, Max lost like three games in a row because he kept looking for four pawns, and there's no four pawns as far as I know. Oh, yeah.
I got that. I got that under control.
So, you know that. Then it's coming to, and I'm not even at this point yet, but I feel this is the next step, is understanding the board thing that shows you like what each card does when you put it down. Understanding that, you know, the white dot is where you put the card down. The other yellows are where it increases the pawn level or steals the other pawns. Mm-hmm. And then reds are all your abilities, like add points, minus points, whatever they do. And just understanding how that works, because the fucked up thing is there are only three lanes, top, middle, bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But the little graphic on the card is five lanes. So you kind of have to, like,
pick and choose.
No, you have to sort of figure out, like, when it says it's here, like, the most important card to do this for is first card, not to spoil any other cards you get. You get a honeybee card or something like that. Right. And you can only play that on the top or the bottom row.
Yeah.
Because if you play it in the middle, it does nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
But it looks like if you play it in the middle, you should get top and bottom. But right.
which has confused me,
yes.
But I never noticed that it had five slots until you just said it.
Yeah. So that once you get that down and can kind of read that, luckily there's no timer for your moves. You can start setting up the board and setting him up or her, depending on who you're playing. And I'm at that point where I'm starting to get that, where I'm losing a lot of games by either bad card draws or bad luck in terms of what they draw, like sort of in that case. And then there's some horseshit things where they get the right card at the right time to win by one or two.
Oh, that's always the worst. Like I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, I got this. There's only one spot left. They're not going to pull a three or a four or whatever. And all of a sudden, magically just get that card.
Yeah. I was telling the story off podcast, but I had one where they pulled a card and it was a card that does a minus and it hit my card, which destroyed my card, which, by the way, there are cards that have minuses. And if it's like a minus one and your card only has one, it destroys the card.
Off. Yeah.
And so forth. If it's a three minus, whatever. They hit that, blew up my card, which lost me that lane, and then gave them extra points because they won the middle lane. And I lost by one because of that. And the thing happens when your card gets destroyed, the pawn isn't yours anymore. It becomes their pawn.
Mm-hmm.
So you not only lose the card and the number, you lose the spot. So those cards are kind of bullshit. But I've used them.
Wouldn't you?
And the other thing in the rules to remember is that each lane has a score by adding up your numbers, your right-hand numbers, and you only get credit for the lanes you win. So it does not matter if you lost 10-9 in the middle lane. You don't get credit for any of those nine.
Nope.
So be cognizant of, it was like a thing I did in Marvel Snap. I was playing that where once I knew that a section was lost, like there was absolutely no way I'm winning that section, I would ignore it completely and just go win the other two sections, you know, or concentrate on those. And there's been times where I look and I'm like, I have that green pawn in the middle there. I'm not going to win this. The only thing I can do is put something there that affects one of the other two lanes that I do have a chance at winning. And it just becomes that kind of meta in there, trying to figure that out.
I mean, as soon as I have figured out that I can't win, I restart the game.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately. Yeah.
That one was bullshit. But anyway, what I did was I lose by one. So I came back the next game and I just like blow the person out of the water and like run up the score and ended up winning 34-0. Just to let you know, most scores are like 12-7, you know, like yeah, low.
Close, usually.
Usually pretty close. No, I board controlled and had like four open slots when they couldn't play anymore. And I just started dropping my biggest numbers into all those spots, whether they did anything or not to the rest of the board. Just fives and fours and just pumping up the numbers. And then I just flipped off my television once I won. So, it's having that kind of effect. And it's also having an effect in the sense where I was saying to Tom that I can't watch some people play the game because I understand streaming's tough when you have thousands of people on your chat. But like the Max thing where he's like getting basic things wrong was just like frustrating me. Not enough that I'd stop watching or really like send anything
to
him.
It's hard to watch someone play a strategy game.
Yeah.
When it's not your strategy.
Yeah.
So yeah. I get it.
Yeah, it's not even but. That. It's like every so often with games like that, because I had this problem with Inscription. It's where I want to start yelling, like, especially if I'm watching on YouTube and the game's already happened. I keep going, did someone tell him? Did someone tell him? Did anybody tell him that he's missing the main conceit of this game? And that's why he keeps losing. Like, please. There's only been one time with Inscription. I was watching the now remap people, the old Waypoint people, Natalie and Rob played Inscription, and they were so much better at the game than I was. And they just took forever to make all their moves. And then there's a part, just real tangent here. There's a part in Inscription where the game basically tries to make you lose when you're on your first run. And they figured out how to beat that one. Wow. And win. Like, they send cards that are, like four, like, two or three, like, power and six, like, hit point hits. You know, like, basically unwinnable. And they got through that. And I was, the first time I was watching, I was like, I picked up some good strategies from this. And figuring out things. But watching Queen's Blood, it's like, oh, man. But they get it eventually. But I just feel like it's going to be like frustration every so often when they introduce a new thing into it. Yeah, what I'll say to you, Tom, is keep playing Queen's Blood.
I will do that.
Just keep doing it. That's all I'll say. it's just, I'm not going to mention them, but there's a lot of good characters that you probably met some of them already that you play Queen's Blood against.
Well, I will certainly do that.
But yeah, so that's the main minigame so far. But there are a bunch of other mini games that pop up, and I think they do a really good job of it. And there's one section, I'm not going to go any further than just saying this for you, Tom, because I don't know. The quests that have to do with proto-relics, I don't know if you've seen those yet, if you've gotten any to any of the Life Springs and things. Yes. Those are such great like fan service stuff for the last two games, you know, Intermission and Remake.
Yeah.
So far in the two I've done. And I would recommend if you do any of the side quests, play Queen's Blood and do the proto relic things, because there's some really good content in there. And I'm pretty sure I know what one of them is going to be in another town just from what I've seen so far and what I saw in a trailer. And I'm excited for how to integrate it into it.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. And it's not even about that. It's Remake throwback. And yeah, so yeah, the what I'm so excited about going forward is that it seems like they got all of the important stuff out of the way for the most part. Not fully telling you everything, but like,
yeah, I mean, you still have to play it like people don't know what's gonna happen.
But for those of you know, they get those big things sort of out of the way early. And they even make a joke about one thing, which is pretty funny about it. But I like that they did that. Like, hey, and bang,
there,
boom.
There is one thing I want to talk to you about off podcast.
Yeah, because we'll do that. Yeah,
there's a very specific thing said. By one of the characters, and I want to talk about it, but
yeah, I can't wait to spoiler cast this, by the way, Tom.
Yeah, it's gonna be
it's gonna be a while, but I'm like excited to do it, but because there's so much shit. But yeah, so far I'm loving Queen's Blood. Has me as hooked as Gwent did from when I was playing through Witcher 3. It's got those inscription vibes that I love. Some of the other mini games have been fantastic. I can't wait to play some of them again at the Gold Saucer. And they do enough of new and old stuff that I am ready for the next 70 to 80 hours of my life from here on out, since I'm probably going to want 100% every area to get as much time with the game as possible.
I don't see any way around not doing everything.
Yeah.
Unless it's like incredibly difficult and I have no chance to like sit and do it, but I can't see myself not doing it.
I'll just let you know, I have not seen anything that's not Chadley be too difficult once you understand like what the battle wants you to do.
Yeah.
You know, Chadley stuff can be a little pain in the ass, and I've already skipped one. And it was one that I had trouble with in the demo as well.
Yeah, there was one I was having issues with in the demo, and I was like, you know what? I don't need to do this right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same one for me. But yeah, so you should be able to do most of all the side content with no problem. Don't worry about getting all the objectives in a thing. As long as you get one of them and beat it, it's fine. You might get some special stuff in the battle simulator, I think, if you do a certain amount of full completes. Mm-hmm. But if you're not really going to be worried about Battle Simulator outside of summons, then don't kill yourself trying to do that, just to let you know.
Okay.
But yeah, so my final thoughts on this is I think with every passing scene, it is amazing how well they did casting the main five people. They Barrett is really good and, you know, has a lot of that trying to be cool dad energy and kind of gets caught by the younger ones in the group. I think, you know, Britt and Brianna doing Tifa and Aerith have chemistry, even though I don't know if they ever recorded together.
I doubt any of them recorded together. To my knowledge, usually video games do not have, they do not act together.
But yeah, there's a lot of, that's a really good job by the editing crew and them personally doing the, you know, recording that, you know, a lot, because there's a lot of like, Tifa and Aerith are basically just making fun of everyone else that they either come across or in the group. And they're just having a buddy girl travel movie.
Yeah, I love that they made them like buddy buddy. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, there's a joke that happens later that we'll discuss off. That's not a spoiler. That I think is pretty funny. Later on, that might hint at stuff, might change a little bit later. But we already know where that, you know, that goes. But that's been the best part. I don't think this game works without the voice acting. I've seen some people joke around because of the battle simulator that when you think the villain is one person, but you find out who the real villain is, and they put Sephiroth and Chadley back side by side. that was one of the tweets I saw, and that was it. I was like, pretty good. I'm all in on this. I'm going to keep playing it. There's not much coming out the rest of next couple months that I can't wait. Like, I can wait for. I think the next game that's like 100%, I will drop it, drop this for it, would be college football. Everything else I can wait a month or two or whatever to play it. It's not like Remake where I had to have that finished because Last of Us 2 was coming out in June. So, yeah. What's your final thoughts so far? And just let you know, like I said, I'm about 25 hours in. You're a little less than that, so
I'm a lot less than that.
Yeah.
So I'm about 3 hours, 3.5 hours in. But this is due to the fact that I can't sit and play for 4 hours at a time. If I could, I would have played a lot more. But you know, little things.
Yeah.
Little humans. So, So my final thoughts for the moment are that this game puts off the correct vibes to start. I'm happy with it. I'm excited to see where it goes. It's given some interesting clues to what might happen next. And I have a lot of questions. Let's just put it that way. I have a lot of questions that I'm hoping will be answered well and not like kill the story. So we'll see how it goes. So far I'm enjoying the hell out of it, and it's doing its job in making me want to go back and play it.
So for the next until Tom does need to take his hiatus, what we've been playing is basically going to be this game and Persona 3. So be aware of that for the next month and a half.
Yeah, you'll just be getting up rebirth updates. That's really what it comes down to.
So excited. It's gonna be a fun spring for me with both games. But we did play another game.
Quite a while
ago. Very briefly, but a while ago. Because I had other RPGs that I needed to get into. Tom, we played Chrono Cross for the PlayStation 1 for this week's Retro Roulette. I will start out with my thoughts because they're going to be very short, because I didn't get much further than you did in the stream. But it's one of those games, and I think the reason why I stopped where I stopped because I figured out very early that I'm like, all right, this is the game I have to play. And I'm going to need more time to play it because of what's coming up. I liked everything from the opening there. Still a little confused. I know it's not even a direct sequel, I don't think, or anything like that. But
I think it is a direct sequel, Mark.
Is it?
Because they show scenes from Chrono Trigger in the opening.
Then I'm wrong. But so now I'm interested to see how they connect it all to the post Lavos world. Spoilers, Tom, for, you know,
it's fine. 30-year-old game or 40-year-old game at this point.
Yeah, but so yeah, I liked what I saw so far. Probably have to get a little bit used to the combat, you know, because it is different from, you know, Chrono Trigger, because it was one of those, you know, got to do something different for the PlayStation than we did for Super Nintendo. And I'm interested to see more of FMV stuff, because I think that's the one wild thing why I love going back and either playing or watching other people play those, you know, 7, 8, and 9, because just the wild difference between what you play in the game and what they show in the videos always is fun to me. But yeah, I liked it. Definitely was not knocked off my bucket list. Like some other games that I was like, oh, I have to try this. And we played a little bit for Retro. And I'm like, eh, I don't really need to play through this. But yeah, yeah, I'm curious to see what your thoughts are. Obviously rehash, you know, what you thought, because we did play that, you know, probably almost a month ago, looking at
it was quite a while due to, you know, life in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. I do have to say that the opening was a bit confusing. There was stuff that if I didn't have you there, I would have been like, what the hell am I doing? How am I supposed to do this? So it does seem like one of those games that you might have wanted a guide to start, at least.
Yeah.
But once you get past that, it played well. I like the battle system a lot. Putting myself in that 2000 mindset, this game would have blown my mind the way it looked. It looks gorgeous for a game of that era. And it seems like quite a jump from even like Final Fantasy VIII. I feel like it's a pretty big jump in the battle system and everything like that. Music's great. Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross music is always fantastic. But yeah, overall, excellent. Excellent game, and I'm with you. I got to where I was, and I was like, all right, I'm going to put a pin in this and come back to it, and this may end up being, you know, whenever I get to do it, it may be the next game that gets played on opposite of that, because I need to play it. I need to sit down and play this game and not just let it stew on the shelf.
Yeah, so same here. You know, it goes back to, and this is totally off topic from the game, but my last thoughts on it. It totally goes back to an era of games that I wish I was much more into games that I liked more than worrying about, you know, what
being cool. Yeah, I know.
Being cool.
I'm with you.
I think the only game that I played that fell on the non-sports games, on trying to be cool with my friends, you know, game, was I did play through Final Fantasy X. And, you know, it always felt like don't mention anybody I'm playing that. sort of time period in late elementary school, early high school. You know, it's like Resident Evil and, you know, Madden and, you know, stuff like that. And I wish that I was still as into games as I am now back then, because there's so many games that I missed that I just don't have time to go back to now, because they're making so many great things, like new things. But that's one of the reasons why I'm glad that I got that little emulator machine, you know, from you, Tom, there. So that if I do decide to do, you know, Duck Station works on it, that's probably the highest level of game that currently works on it. I got to upgrade some hardware stuff, which we're like half of a generation off from everything working. It's really weird when I looked into it, but that's not here or there. But yeah, now I got any of those late Super Nintendo, early PS1 stuff that I just missed because it became uncool to do it. And Chrono Cross is one of those. I want to go through and I have all these ideas for streams, but I just had this the other day because I was watching something GameSpot was doing with Tam over at GameSpot. talking about his 10 out of 10s that he's given. And I was like, I should go back and do like the first 10 out of 10s when it was like very scrutinized. Mm-hmm. And just like play through them on stream if I haven't already. You know, and just the ones that I like, meaning play them on, not on stream, like have beaten them before. Like I think Mario 64 and I think Ocarina of Time are two of them. Or maybe not, but you know what I mean? You know, I think that's a pretty cool thing. And then seeing that this game got a 10 out of 10, is what making me definitely keep it on the back burner.
Yep. I know what you mean.
Yep. All right. Scores. From what I played through it, and I don't want to give it a perfect yet, but I will give it a 4.5 out of 5. Just because of the, as you mentioned, some of the early stuff with the battle system was kind of confusing, but I feel after going through it that that system will kick ass by the end. So 4.5 out of 5 until I really get into them, probably end up a 5 out of 5.
I 100% agree. I'm going 4.5 out of 5. Once I get to a point where I get past that initial clumsiness, I feel like it will be a 5 out of 5. But to start, 4.5.
And I also feel that that clumsiness is us coming at it from in 2024.
Oh, I'm sure that it has a lot to do with it.
I feel like if we would have played it when it first came out, we'd be like, oh, yeah, it makes total sense. It's what games are doing nowadays. but yeah, so Tom, let's spin the wheel and see what game we're going to play for an hour to take us away from Rebirth. Let's spin the wheel. Well, Tom, I know it chronologically, it seems like we've would have played a racing game pretty close to this racing game, but it's been a month and a half. So, and we're counting down the days until you are no longer around for a couple months. So might as well get a lot of these out since these are more your wheelhouse than my wheelhouse. So which one are we playing this?
We are playing Outrun 2 for the Microsoft Xbox.
Nice. Happy birthday, Xbox. sorry. That's how my brain works. Anytime someone says original Xbox, I immediately go to the Usher promos. And those might even be 360 promos. But anyway, I know Outrun came out for a few other systems. So if you have it for those, feel free to play it. Let us know if you see any differences from when we stream. That'd be a cool little discussion to have. Outrun 2. Let's get some racing going, Tom. Any memories of this?
So I didn't own this when I first had an Xbox. So I've played it, and I've played the original Outrun, and it's surprisingly deep. They did expand upon it. They did a little re-release of it called Outrun 2006 that came out for the PS2 and PSP, I think. But it's a fun racing game. I'm sad that there's no Outrun 3. You would have thought that by now Sega would have put that out, but it is what it is. But yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You don't have to be good at racing games. Let's just put it that way.
Exactly. All right. So join us tonight. We'll be playing through a little bit of this game before we, as our break from Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So thank you for joining me. Remember, programming note, Retro Roulette tonight. Persona 3 on Wednesday and Sunday, I think. Yeah, Sunday. Because Saturday's built up with taking Kitty Ashcat to her first con.
Fun.
So Wednesday and Sunday for Persona. If I get home in time, maybe Saturday, because I really want to try to eat into that game, to be honest. I don't need it stretching out 6-7 months. Yeah, be on the lookout for that. And let us know your thoughts on Rebirth or if you've played Chrono Cross before over on Twitter at GameVaultPod. We're on basically all social medias, Blue Sky, Threads, you name it, we're there. Feel free to just let us know what you think. And So we'll see you next time. For Tom, this is Mark. Bye.